Thank you for tuning in for today's live stream, this live discussion. This is a continuation of the Freedom and Liberty series that me and Stan Barabish from Bodhisattva Love are doing together. And we're going to get the show started here for you just momentarily. So we appreciate everybody for tuning in. And here we go. Alrighty, really quick before we get things started, we want to let everybody know if you guys are interested in taking advantage of getting a free half ounce of silver. If you're a first-time buyer at Money Metals Exchange, you can visit moneymetals.com. You purchase $100 or more in whatever precious metals, gold, silver, and you're going to get a free half ounce of silver as long as you use the promo code RICE. Free half ounce of silver, and it's a way to support the channel as well. And anytime you see a dip in the price is always a good time to dollar cost average and accumulate. So here we are. Stan, what's going on, brother?
Well, nothing much, man. Just getting it done, man.
Well, you're in Florida and South. You should say get her done.
Get her done. Get her done.
So this is a continuation of our Freedom and Liberty series, episode 6. So I definitely would encourage people to check out the video that we released this past Monday, I believe. It's been a crazy week. It feels like it's Friday or Saturday, but Monday, the interview with Carl Lentz came out as part 5 for the Freedom and Liberty series. And if people haven't checked that out, you definitely need to check that out. And I would definitely appreciate everybody for doing so. Real quick, want to shout out everybody in the stream. We've got EJ Oakwin. We have Carrie Lakes in the house, Florida representing, CR McDonald, Jason, the Public Awakening. I'm going to see you tomorrow, Jason. I'm going to be at Bitcoin Ben's meetup in Wayne, New Jersey. You can get the details on Bitcoin Ben's website at bitcoinben.io. Going to be in New Jersey tomorrow. Ken Bozak's going to be with me. Obviously, Bitcoin Ben's going to be there. Jason, the Public Awakening. I know Crypto Quandary is going to be out there and a couple other cats. CR McDonald, appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate everybody for joining us. We are live streaming on my channel, Rise Crypto. We are live streaming on Stan's channel, Bodhisattva Love. And we're also live streaming on my Twitter account as well. Depending on where you're watching us at, make sure you subscribe to both channels and support us. It would be greatly appreciated, as it helps other people to be able to see these videos in the stream. And liking, commenting, and sharing and all that good stuff helps out as well. Pauly P is going to be here. I'm not sure if Pauly's taking a nap quite yet because he's going to be picking me up at like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. So he may not be in the stream tonight. But we do have two awesome guests to join us for our live discussion. We have Mr. Eric Sullivan, some might know from Consent of the Governed, soon to come. And he's been on the show quite often. And somebody who I've had on the show recently, a couple of weeks ago, one of the founders from Splinterlands, Agroad Light Hacker. I like to call him Dr. Aggie. Dr. Aggie's in the house with us as well. So I appreciate Eric and Aggie for joining us. And what's going on, fellas?
You first. All right. Well, I'm just trying to keep my brain together. Splinterlands has a giant land sale coming up on the 7th, and we've made it so players that purchase land will be able to mint the NFTs that we sell for the game. So, like, never in the history of Hearthstone or Magic did they ever tell me, hey, Aggie, we're tired of selling and making these cards. Why don't you do it instead? But that's what we're doing with our players. If they have land, they can mint cards, and that's in like a week. And it's been months in the making, and the first pre-sale is going live. My community is going crazy, and just trying to stay on the ball and keep the wheels from falling off.
Well, I'm glad you in particular mentioned that, because I've got to get you scheduled. We're probably going to have the interview with you coming out either the day before or the day of. So I'll get with you and we'll figure out a way to schedule that. I meant to already do that. But I'm glad that you did mention land sale. And I am a huge fan of Splinterlands. I've been playing a lot more later at night. Nice. I think I've gotten like 400 dark energy crystals, the DEC token. So it's pretty cool, man. I'm really enjoying it. I'm getting a little bit better of a hang on it. I've won a couple of the different quests and things. So all right. I definitely encourage people, if they're not familiar, make sure you're checking out Splinterlands. I've got an interview just from a couple of weeks ago. There's a part one on my YouTube channel, and then part two is a free video on my Patreon channel. And the cool thing about that is it's just a separate discussion about freedom. And while you're at my Patreon channel, it gives you an opportunity to look over and consider actually being a patron. It's a minimum of $5 to become a patron, and it would be greatly appreciated. Eric, what's going on, homie?
I thought that was very interesting how new technology is now circling back. It turns out that as long as you own land, you can do something. It's very, especially in a new world. I mean, that's very interesting.
That's funny that that's what you took from all that, though. That's really
exactly what I took from the whole thing. I was like, wait a second, I've heard that before. wait.
Yeah, it's really voting rights. It'll make you a man.
We were just talking about voting earlier, and I don't think any of us are going to do it. And it's funny that whole thing went through. I'm doing really well. Obviously, you know, probably as stressed out as everybody else, trying to get stuff done, and then also trying to deal with all of this political garbage and all the ads going back and forth, and you know, Biden's son's garbage and everything else, and who knows what the hell is going to happen and if people are going to get arrested or what the hell. All I know is that when it's all said and done, as long as every single one of us just understands that it's all up to us to do and change the future, then I think we're going to be all right. It doesn't really matter who says they're going to be daddy. It depends on who you tell that you need a daddy, you know? So
yeah.
I'm very interested in what this conversation is going to bring. Checked out everything, obviously, between Dr. Rice and the Aggie down there. I checked out that, and that's a cool title, Rice. I think it should be switched, though.
Well, I the Dr. Aggie thing is just something I nicknamed him, and I knew he wasn't going to do it, but I wanted to be a doctor as well today. If other YouTubers can be doctors whenever it's pleasing to them, I should be able to be a doctor as well.
So I should have been an Esquire, right? So we can all have titles and we can all do those things. We're not supposed to have titles and nobility, right?
Fuck it, man! I'm bringing in the babies at the dock, and I'm putting them into the maritimes.
This is the era of millennials, right? This is when you can assume and identify as whatever you want. So if you want to identify as a doctor, that is your right, sir. And if anybody challenges that, they're a racist. That's just how this world works now.
And this comes from an actual doctor who spent a lot of time going to school being a doctor who's not actually a doctor because he sees the system for what it is.
I'm a chemist, by the way, not a medical doctor.
Right. Well, you're still a doctor, man.
He holds a doctorate. He holds a doctorate, right?
Holds a doctorate.
I always have to put this grown man in timeout. He always wants to do these weird things. Tamara Gambrill, thank you for tuning in. Dawn Marie, Grant Burrows. Grant, you are like sandpaper sometimes. I think you are more abrasive than me, but I love you. But I love you, brother. And I know you mean the best. I know you mean nothing but the best of intentions. So I'm not saying that to be negative by any means. So, hey, guys, the reason I wanted to invite Dr. Agrode, Light Hacker, on was because, you know, in addition to me wanting to learn about Splinterlands, is we went down a weird rabbit hole of him apparently being interested in a lot of the things that me and Stan have been covering, and Eric has been talking in some conversations with. He's been following Russell J. Gould and the quantum grammar system. He's really fascinated by the language and the setup. In addition, I'll let you kind of speak for yourself, Aggie. The second part that we did was on my Patreon channel. So it's almost as if it doesn't exist because I got a small number of patrons and not everybody just goes over there and visits. So you want to kind of give everybody a little slight background on how you became this liberty-minded person?
Sure. I had a business that failed like a decade ago. And it was a biofuels business. I was like a nice progressive Democrat from New England trying to figure out like, how can I make the world a better place? Because climate change is coming and we all have to do our part. And when some of that legislation didn't hit, and it was so obvious that it should, things started going awry in my brain. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. So I started going down a rabbit hole of like, how come this legislation didn't pass? Like, how come this politics stuff isn't acting like they taught me in school or that I grew up believing? And really had to go down a bunch of different rabbit holes, because as soon as you lift the veil, just like the slightest, the second that you just stop accepting everything that they taught you is true, you just start being like, wait a second, I'm not sure I believe that. The second that you look at this stuff skeptically, you like, I found that I couldn't stop looking everywhere. But like the number of lies that I've been told across the realms of science, spirituality, for medicine, for how politics works, international, whatever, it's all full of shit. And so, you know, it's weird because the people that are in the system are kept there. And like the somebody that is like the least likely to ever turn in this direction are like the doctors, right? The people that have invested 30 to 40 years of their lives getting into this. Like, I had to have some severely difficult and challenging things for me to like undo all of that, to then look at this and be like, wait a second, now that I'm thinking about it, this is all shit. So I had to go through all that. And I actually think that out of all of this, I've been making memes and stuff for like, since I guess 2012 was really my start of awakening. So for about 8 years, I've been making memes. And one of my favorites is the pathway to sort of like self-changing. And what I realized is that it actually involves two depressions, two flat out depressions. The first is when you realize the world doesn't work the way you think it does, because you spent all that time in school and everything else, trusting teachers and trusting politicians and trusting whoever. And then you realize, wait, it's all crap. And then the second depression, which is even worse, is when you figure out how this world actually works, which I am still in the process of doing. I don't feel like I have like the world's best understanding of it. I'm very confident in what I know is not true. And I'm still trying to piece together how do I think this place works? But everything that I've seen tells me the world is run by very bad people who are very happy to cause harm. And the central power that they have is the ability to print money at whim. And they have used that to their advantage and to the disadvantage of everyone else in humanity. That would be my general statement of how this world operation works and the consequences for the rest of us.
That's a good assessment.
Well said.
Agreed. Yeah. It's very, I like how you say two depressions, right? So you have certain points in your life, pivotal moments, whether you want to formative, you know, moments of change, whatever you want to call them. I've had those and I definitely know those, but instead of just, and I'm not going to say you're a negative person or anything, but instead of just saying that those are pivotal moments of change, there's also the bigger and better. When you go through this, what you're discussing, I've noticed that, you know, Mark Twain is right. You know, there's only two points in your life where you really understand what's going on. And that's when you were born and when you figure out why. You know, so, you know, if you were to go through the same depressions, just like the Bitcoin market and crypto or, you know, whatever it is, you have your highs and your lows. And I don't think enough people understand that when you figure out why you were born is probably one of the most like formative lessons in life. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a oh my God, I'm going to be the founder of Facebook or SpaceX or anything else like that. My personal opinion is you may have a couple of those moments, right? So you may live in phases of, you know, the rotation of whatever planet alignments or anything else, but you may find that throughout your cycles of time on this planet that we get to live on, you might find out multiple reasons why you're alive. And to me, those are the most important parts, but you never forget those depressions that got you out of the original funk that you were engineered to be in.
So they empowered the rest of your decisions, right? The second that you know what is wrong, it took me a long time. It took me like almost a decade to figure this stuff out to the point where I'm like comfortable with it and, you know, have a pathway that I'm happy with. But, you know, my goal has always been like, how can I help other people? And at first I was like, I can help other people by helping this government and being a part of that. And now I'm like, okay, wait, I still want to help people. I still want people to be healthy and be able to think for themselves and be creative and have enough economic liberty to make whatever choices they need for their family. But that is no longer the way that I would go about doing it. So, but that's just, it's a real empowering moment when, after I realized all the previous work that I'd done was basically wasted, now I can actually start making good decisions of where to go. And that wasn't possible without all of that journey up until here. And now I think if I can make that journey faster for others, then that'll be one of my services to humanity.
Well said, man. And I mean, that's also part of the reason why, you know, when I one to invite you to this conversation and two to get this group thing going and have you be a part of it, because I feel like after speaking with you, that was, you know, we met initially because of Splinterlands, but like I told you, I think maybe there was a deeper reason for us meeting and we didn't know what it was. And it was Splinterlands that brought us together. So, Eric can attest from this. We've known each other for a little over a year now. I want to say probably going on like 14 months. And
we just had our anniversary.
About 13 months ago, we were in Philadelphia, roughly. And then this time we were in Vegas. And he can attest for a lot of different things happening that you would think at first would have been coincidences, but then when the coincidences just continue and continue and continue and continue, it just, you start to realize that there's a little bit more to this. And it's been very humbling and very blessing, but it's a very blessed experience. And it's
a lot of the stuff, like I have to equate it to people and give people an analogy. And it's like, you can only count so many grains of sand before you have to relabel it a pile, right? So all of these little things that happen can be coincidences for a while before you have to sit there and go, wait a second, it's almost about time to recategorize all of these grains of sand into a pile that we can categorize into something else. And obviously, Aggie over here knows a lot about, taking ideas or somebody else's thought regarding, or an equation, and breaking it down. I'm very interested to talk to this cat, obviously.
Now, Aggie, we didn't touch on this much when we spoke last. I'm curious, you said that you have written something that would help people that are interested in learning about quantum grammar. I'm kind of describing it as like a key.
But yeah, so learning, most people that want to go learn quantum grammar, it's going to take you, David Wynn Miller will tell you, he is now deceased, but in his videos, he will tell you that it'll take you 200 to 300 hours of working with this system for you to start learning it. And that is longer than most people are willing to do, especially for some weird language thing.
Yeah, how much time are we talking? Like, how many years does that equate out? Or what amount of months or what does that equate to total?
It's absurd. Well,
that's kind of short. I've been hearing 2,000 to 3,000 hours.
Well, you know, the question is, what level of mastery do you have? And I would say,
where do you aspire?
Yeah. I mean, with like 200 to 300 hours, you should be able to like start putting simple sentences together. But that's an absurd amount of time. I mean, in like the modern day era where most people can't hang out more than like 5 minutes without losing their attention span, the idea that anybody's going to sit there and go study this stuff for hundreds of hours on like some hope that maybe there's some relevance to this, I just think that's pretty far-fetched. So to me, you know, I'm a former professor. I spent 4 years teaching chemistry at a military college. And, you know, what I found that I was good at, when I learn things, not because I'm absolutely brilliant, it's because, like, my learning process is just really hard, slow, and takes an enormous amount of work. And I go through and I figure out what are all the steps that I need to learn this. And I get it. I get these kind of rules into, like, you know, very, very bite-sized pieces. And I've been good at teaching other people that. And so my contribution that at one point I'll go actually sit down and write up and make sort of a formal document on is how could somebody sit in less than an afternoon and figure out the basics of syntax, parse, and correct sentence structure, grammar. And, you know, I'm not an expert at these things, but I'm an expert teacher. And I think that I could show the world how to do this. And, you know, maybe initially I thought it was 1 hour, but I think it's probably two. I bet I could get somebody writing or at least doing some syntax in 2 hours now. That's roughly.
That's a bold statement.
It's a lot of, you know, it took a lot to get there. I personally spent hundreds of hours watching and learning. And I'm more or less, I'm not entirely self-taught. There's a guy on YouTube, Jason Matthew Glass, and he's got tutorials on this. And I actually sat down for, I think I've done 2 hours with him now. And I had like little bits here and there that I was doing wrong. So I was getting help to go clarify those. But I don't know. At this point, I'm pretty solid with it. I think I know all the mistakes I had been making. And now when I get sort of a free weekend, it's my plan to kind of sit down, write up some documents, make a video or two, and explain, you know, in like a 1 or 2 hour series, how somebody with zero experience in this could show up, watch 2 hours, do a couple worksheets, and get at least the basics of syntax down, the basics of parse, and ideally even write 1 or 2 simple sentences.
Eric has a question.
Yeah. Have you, I mean, it sounds like your method, right? Your, let's call it a scientific method is to, for adoption, is to create an easier path to completely get somebody semi-fluent, right? They're going to be able to do some stuff. And I'm sure you're going to be able to grade that on a certain, you know, quantify that in a certain level. All of those things, and especially with quantum grammar, even at a mastery level, I have still yet to see how it's utilized in a way where it does anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so you're talking about all of these hours, and is it something, I mean, obviously you don't just do something to do something. You do something because you feel it's useful. It's something useful to you. A, have you used it? And B, can you see a use case for it that will help society?
So I think in general, so big picture, it is surprisingly powerful to me just how much fraud is in all of the written documents and contracts that we see. And whether or not you ascribe to Russell J. Gould's system of quantum grammar, you don't necessarily need that particularly to be able to go spot out all the challenges.
Let me just chime in real quick. Russell J. Gould did say in our video that if it doesn't come across his desk, then it's not valid. Did he not say that, Rice?
Yeah, but I mean, again, we know that Russell has a little bit of a...
You're muted.
Am I muted?
No, Eric was, sorry.
Oh, okay. I didn't think I was muted, but he has a little bit of an ego, we realized. I'm not to say anything negative about him as a person. It's just something that we can point out because if you really listen to what Russell says, if you can't gather that he has a little bit of an ego, that he even says it quite often that he loves himself, and then he says he loves other people. So I'm not trying to diss him, but even when it comes to the quantum grammar, when we talked about the idea of trying to gather all the teachers in addition to him and get everybody on the same page, within like 3 days, 4 days, ask Dan. I was like, man, screw this. Like, they are on their own. Like, that community is so toxic. Like, nobody can agree on what is proper. We've got a guy in our group that actually lives in Philly that I'd like to introduce you to that says that David Wynn Miller was compromised early on, and everything he taught Russell J. Gould is a form still, that keeps still us in fiction. The still babble, keeps us in the fiction. It's not because he can say grammatically where certain things that they are doing that would actually do the same thing that, to the contracts as what Russell and David were saying, which is basically void, says nothing, void, nothing, void, right?
Well, but that's the thing with Carl Lentz, right? So that I'm a huge fan of what Christopher James is because of simplification. You're getting everything down to its base pair. You're getting everything down to its lowest common denominator. And I feel like a lot of this, you know, I love the idea of a complex grammar. I'm not a programmer or a coder, but I can see the benefit of having a library utilizing Python compared to a library utilizing C++. I can see the difference in how it, you know, interacts with the person, whether it's on a mobile application or a web application and a website. So I'm just trying to get it from your perspective, Aggie. I'm looking to see, like, in your mind, you've put a lot of time into this. You're thinking about making this a bit more streamlined. You obviously see something there that maybe we're all missing, right?
So the first part is that all of that grammar is written in fraud. All these contracts, the government is a corporation.
Bold statement. It's a bold statement. It's a very bold statement because there's a lot of different grammar out there, whether you're using civil, which Roman, or you're going to use anything like David Wynn Miller, and then all of a sudden you're going to use, let's say, Gould, and then you could do something that is completely antithetical and very simplistic and go with the common grammar of the people, which would be one of the reasons why consent of the governed means something to me, is because people ultimately rule, they just don't know it yet. So I'm just trying to get to this thing where if the population doesn't understand how to do it, I get why you would do what you're doing to get people to understand the population or get the population to understand what you're doing. I think there's a simpler method.
Let's cut to the chase real quick. Do any of us think quantum grammar is going to save the world?
I do not.
I think people will. It has to be people. So there's two things. On the one hand, there's no magical piece of paper that I can wave around in a court, and then they're just going to be like, oh, okay, you win. I mean, these are like some of the most corrupt, horrible human beings willing to commit as much fraud and pain as possible. What it really takes is a lot of people waking up to what that fraud is, what it looks like, what the basis is, and how it's operating. And, you know, that goes back to understanding that these courts are admiralty courts. They seem to be based in merchant law, marine law, admiralty law, and that they're not the sort of de jure courts on the land that we think they are. So it starts by understanding that our basic understanding from your high school civics class of how all this stuff works is crap, and that honestly, the everything that I've figured out is that these governments are actually corporations. You know how everybody's complaining that government acts like a corporation? It is a freaking corporation, and it masquerades as a government. And I can't fully tell if there was a government here at some point. I think there was, and they point back to that, which is now vacant, and they say we represent that. And then there's nobody to rebut it, and they just wander around and they act as a corporation. And just like I wouldn't vote in like Walmart's election, I don't care about that. That's somebody else's problem. Like I don't feel like I should vote in this election because I'm not here to elect corporate officers of a corporate government structure of which I am not an owner of. And I don't want to show myself as some kind of voluntary employee or something like that for them, which would then put me under their rules.
Right. Stan.
Let's not forget what Russell J. Gould went through. If his story is true, even though he knew the grammar to the T better than anyone, apparently, as he claims, and he still didn't get anywhere but put in jail and beat up. So all the people in the quantum grammar community have not gone that route. You know, so you can know this stuff all you want, but then put it into practice. Which court you're going to step into? It's the luck of the draw. Whether you're going to get arrested, you're going to get beat up, you're going to get thrown in jail, and you're going to go down the same road he did. He was given because he went through years of torment and being beat up.
That's part of why we're gathering, man. Is like, so from everybody. This guy Vagrant was talking about. Christopher James has this wrapped around his finger and is utilizing it. Jurisdiction is the key to all this. Now, I want to let everybody know I've got love for Christopher James. I am an alliance member with Earth United, but I don't think anybody 100% has everything 100%. And not only that, there's no solutions being offered up either. Solutions are key. We need to know what's going to go on beyond that point. Set your precedents, but what are we going to do beyond that? I love Christopher, and hopefully we'll be having a conversation about this. And what I want to tell Vagrant is, if you listen to Christopher James enough, you'll hear Christopher James say there's two people that really taught him who he is. One is David Straits. He will be on the show soon. Two is Carl Lentz. He was on the show this past Monday. If you have not watched our interview with Carl Lentz, who is somebody who taught and influenced Christopher James, I would encourage you to make sure you watch that interview. Be open-minded. Make sure you're being open-minded about everything and do your own research. Do your diligence.
There's also, if you're going to look into Carl Lentz and Christopher James, you could see that there's very little on anything regarding Carl Lentz that isn't written. He doesn't do a whole lot of video. He doesn't do a whole lot of that stuff because it wasn't the time. You couldn't get more than 15, 20 minutes on YouTube at the time when he was doing a lot of his conversations and he kind of went off the beaten path. There is a guy, if you're really interested in common law, that called into his show consistently that I've noticed. And the guy is from Michigan. Can't remember what his name is. And a lot of the stuff that Christopher James, I am a huge fan of Christopher James because of his simplification and a couple of things, the nuggets that he is trying to instill in people. It makes a lot of sense. But they came from somebody else than Carl Lentz, which is just some cat from Michigan. And the beauty of that, and I think the synopsis or the whole thesis statement of what I was getting to is the fact that Carl Lentz, even Christopher James, will say there is no template to success when going against this false state, which is completely antithetical to a lot of the other even America State Assemblies or Robert J. Gould or any of those things where they're saying, hey, this is a template and sign up. To me, that school of thought, the other one, the Christopher James school of thought, the Carl Lentz school of thought is that you have to figure this out on your own because every case is not just specific to you and your case, but it's also specific to everybody that's involved in X, Y, and Z. So if you want to make a deal with a judge while you're in a court under the admiralty law and you can make that deal, well, it might be the best deal for you and you should be able to recognize that right there. And you can't recognize it without the education behind understanding exactly what they're saying. So I think Carl Lentz does a really good job of explaining that with one of his scenarios. Hey, yeah, go ahead.
Real quick. I want to highlight Beaver. This because I actually watch Naughty Beaver. Now, Naughty Beaver is actually quite rude about what he was saying about Stan. And I've actually tried to reach out to Naughty Beaver. But Naughty Beaver, I don't know if it's his mental illnesses that won't allow him to respond back to people or anything, but he says that Naughty Beaver did a show on the true king of England, Gregory Hallett. Dude, you're onto something with him. It's how I found now. So just so the third time productions, in case you don't know, we have pretty much
smashed that.
Yeah, pretty much debunked. Unless there's something more to the story, you got to do your research. Go check out the playlist, the Gregory Hallett playlist that I have. Watched more recent interviews. I checked out. I talked to his sisters, went through his actual genealogy lineage. I did a video talking about what the Hidden King book is about. And it's actually co-written by the actual Hidden King himself, Marcos Manuel. And Marcos didn't want to be the king anymore. Not that he was. And somehow Gregory decided he was going to take that role and go with it. And then he was going to add in Christ to the equation as well. Not the second coming of Jesus, by the title of Christ, the joiner of kingdoms. So I will tell you the third time, Naughty Beaver really disappointed me. And if he's going to keep talking about Nostradamus's predictions and say Nostradamus predicted Gregory Howlett, then Naughty Beaver has way more mental issues than he actually claims to have on his channel. So if this gets out to Naughty Beaver, Naughty, hit us up, homie. If you want to talk rude about people, I thought Canadians were nice. Maybe it's your mental illness that's causing you to be rude. But there was a time when your channel was 9,000-10,000 subscribers too. So don't be a dick for one. And two, don't be telling me Nostradamus predicted fucking Gregory Howlett, because I'm taking true offense to that shit, Mr. Naughty Beaver. So
The American Pitbull just ate both of your lunches, Greg Howlett.
Beaver. The Pitbull is going to eat the fucking beaver too.
So let me. So you guys had asked about had you gone into court. So I've only done this with like simple traffic tickets, but I basically copied and pasted some commentary from Anna von Rietz and put that into a letter to the judge and accused the judge for the traffic tickets I got. You are committing crimes against humanity, that this is what you're doing is crap. It's all illegal. And, you know, you are guilty of all these things. The first judge let me off without anything. The second judge, these are two different, one was in Albany and one was in New York City. The one in New York City is my favorite. I was driving through a crosswalk and there were people on either side. Because when you're in New York and downtown New York, like trying to get through, I don't know how to do it any other way. I was so clearly guilty of the statute violation of you can't be in the crosswalk with a car. But because of this letter, because of what I wrote to the judge, when I was standing in court, they wouldn't even let me speak a word. It didn't matter what everybody said in front of me. They guilty, 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 guilty. They called my name. They read the charges. And before I could even speak, they said, there's no justification for this. You're free to go. And so they dismissed my case and they wouldn't even let me speak in the courtroom. So,
they did something like that to Eric too. I mean, they pull you to the side, they dismiss stuff and they don't want you to know what you might've done right so that you can repeat it.
Well, that's the thing is that I've noticed that my own mistakes in court have taught me more than anything else. And the lessons that I've learned afterwards while I'm figuring out why I made that mistake and how it happened and setting everything up and running the whole situation in my head. It might be that a statute like that saying, you know, maybe you owe $50 or $100 or $200 or even $300 isn't enough to really fight what you were getting at, right? They're not going to spend the time dealing with you. You obviously, you might know a little, you might know a lot, but you might actually find out or tell somebody accidentally the secret, you know? And that's why they typically save you for last is what I've noticed. If I go in and I do all of my stuff, they'll save me for last and I know I have to burn a couple hours there and do my thing. So I bring some beer and a cooler and I just sit outside and chill and do my thing. And then I walk back in and I come in and go, okay, so it's my turn now. Awesome. Everybody's gone. Supreme Court's still on the phone. Awesome. Let's roll. And then we just hammer shit out for a little bit. But it seems to me that that is the best method to go in all of this is to get them to decide that it's not worth fighting you for a multitude of reasons. And that's just the art of war, right? So it's not worth fighting you because they don't want to let out their secret. So it's only $200. We'll just let this guy go. If it's, you know, a fucking murder charge, I don't think, Quantum Grammar or Carl Lentz or anybody else is going to get you out of that. That's common law. And that's what they stick to. In my opinion, if you are in right now for a victimless crime, it's because you hired an attorney. And I'm trying to figure out how every victimless crime.
Well, the majority of crimes that take place are victim. The majority are
right,
victimless.
Right. But I'm trying to figure out, and I think all of us are in this freedom movement, is how I can go to jail or owe a fine or lose a privilege that is actually a right. If there's no victim And I think that finding this simplicity, finding this lowest common denominator will get this movement farther, faster than anywhere anybody else could ever do. I don't care if it's written in Sanskrit. This equation is out there.
Yeah. So from some of what I've seen, what I think it is that from the day that you were born, they do a really sadistic thing. They count you have your placenta and you as a human, and they are calling the placenta a person. They are registering that as a stillborn entity. That is your corporate ID.
That goes back to the first papal bull, right?
I haven't been able to figure
this is the Vatican. No, I can actually tell you that I think this is the very first papal bull. And what happened? I don't know if it was a superstition or they made it sound like a superstition, but what they were thinking was that the placenta after birth was a deformed child. They didn't know apparently that, or someone did and they made everybody think otherwise, but they made it sound like, I mean, have you ever heard the myth or the urban legend that everybody is born with a twin and that your baby brother twin
doppelganger
could be inside of you, could have like died and grown and you know, and you, so it came to this thing that they were saying that the afterbirth, the placenta, all that stuff was a baby that died, that, and they didn't realize what it was, so they were burying it, giving it a name or whatever. There was a duplicate you, basically. And that's kind of slightly where some of this started. And it was the Catholic Church. It was a pope. I can't remember which pope, but it was a papal bull. Well, it pointed out to me, because I'm like, what the fuck is a papal bull?
So that to me is where the legal standing as you, as a person, a corporate entity, begins. It's at the moment of your birth when you are registered.
They take your footprints, they capture your soul.
Well, they don't take your footprints anymore, but they, you know, Romley Stewart will do this better than I will, but there's basically the word include, and include is intentionally vague. And they'll say in the paperwork, it includes stillbirth. And then outside of include stillbirth, everything else is ignored. So they'll tell you all the ways that you can be born, but then when it says it includes stillbirth, it ignores everything else. And that paper that you're signing of your birth certificate literally says you were stillborn. And so
it's this equation that inclusion equals exclusion. So what they're saying with Romley, he's saying that if you include something, you automatically exclude, or if you exclude, you automatically include. And this is a grammatical thing, which of course you would pick up on. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm
so
sorry.
It's a dirty trick to basically get your mother to go sign to the state that you were stillborn. And so that is the starting point of your corporate identity as a dead entity into this world. And for all of the groups that I keep running into that I think they have some kind of understanding, is that they begin the journey by declaring, hey, by the way, I'm not this dead thing that you think I am. I'm something different. And it's in that process that I think people are able to get to start making themselves more free, that they're able to say, you know, I am a living man. Here's my, whether it's an affidavit or whether it's your claim of life through Russell J. Gould's quantum system. I think that there's more than one way to say it, but you basically give notice to this government, like this corporate government octopus squid, and you inform them that, hey, I'm not this dead entity. I'm not this stupid placenta thing. I'm actually a whole living, complete man. And all of these things that you're doing in the corporate world, while I recognize that they might apply to this this corporate entity, as it turns out, I am separate from that. So,
well, let me ask you, Aggie, I don't know if you've seen the interview with Carl Wentz, but he made kind of an interesting point. Have you ever heard of any court case or anything that was ever actually brought up where the legal fiction, the birth certificate system, being a corporate entity, has actually ever come into play ever? Because I'm not really quite sure, but I don't think that it has. If it has, I don't think it's been anything that's been successful.
Well, you can watch.
I could be mistaken.
You can watch YouTube videos where people go in and they say, "I'm here on special visitation for the instrument." You know, and you show the birth certificate, and you say, "I am a." I forgot the term, but you say, "I am here on special visitation as the administrator for the birth certificate or documentation or whatever," and then you submit that and say, "Gosh, I forgot how it goes." But there's YouTube videos that you can watch. I've said it before in our other videos. I just can't think how you say it right now. But there are videos where people have gone and done this. Were they successful? I can't remember. Some of the videos cut off. There's one with a mountain man. He just goes in there and he says, "I don't plea. I'm not an animal. Pig. Oink oink."
Yeah, but I mean,
you know, sheep.
And the judge
walks out, and the judge left the bench. So he goes, "Well, judge left the bench. We're out of here." And there was someone. You can look up the mountain man in court.
So there's no admission. There's no nothing in court record that says it. So if the courts see it happening, they either just let your shit go and they try not to let you talk, and there's nothing that's put on record. So, I mean, if you talk to anybody about this, even lawyers for the most part, you end up coming off looking a little bit crazy because people are like, "I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, this is never ever come into play to affect my life in any sense." Now, I mean, I've been trying to look into this back system and look into this, what happens on the back end with the courts as far as the money. Because I mean, I'm seeing stuff about the creditor debit accounts, but whether or not there's legitimacy to that, I don't know. I mean, it's like, why would somebody even take the time of like technically investing in you as a person, as a corporation when you're born? What's the point in that? Like, obviously once. Does this make any sense?
Yeah, Eric's trying to talk too, and he's not coming in clearly.
I think your Bluetooth's not working from where you're at, Eric.
Yeah, it's breaking up. It's like gargling.
But ultimately, what's the solution? I mean, from here forward, you don't have your birth in a hospital. You record the birth in a Bible. You do everything on your own. I met a girl when I was traveling. She had her baby in her backyard with her friends, you know, I mean, in Arizona somewhere, you know.
My sister, I thought about this. My sister
never registered child.
My sister was born at home, and her birthday is actually different than the birth certificate. She was, because of a delay, because she wasn't born in a hospital. There was a midwife or a nurse or something like that. This is back in 78, 79. I was a little kid, like 3-4 years old. So, but yeah, I was wanting to look into that a little bit more because she was born at home, wasn't born in the hospital.
I think ultimately you just need to go give notice to this octopus squid and say,
right. Yeah, if you don't try to like do the birth certificate stuff and do all the stuff that the hospitals that they technically require for a newborn, then they actually threaten to take your kid away from you, or threaten to put charges against you for it.
Yeah. So you go along with it, you sign the stuff, and then when people are older, they can go clarify their own status. When they're at the age of majority, they go and they inform this enterprise, this government, this corporation, and you say, "Here's my affidavit. I'm a human. And I'm not."
No, you're not a human. If you study quantum grammar and stuff like that, and watch Justinian Deception.
I'm a man.
Yeah, you're just a man. Sure. A human would be a monster, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Stan?
Yeah, that sounds like it. But you know, like, I'm a natural person. I'm a man. I'm a complete, whole, living, man.
Me and Eric is probably going to go spend some time with Carl Lentz because his knowledge of etymology is intense. Between someone like him and like Jordan Maxwell, who unfortunately seems to have lost his mind in his old age, who I've got much respect for all of his old work, but the current Jordan Maxwell, we were hoping to have him on the show, but that's just not going to happen, unfortunately. Just, again, the old man seems to have lost his mind.
I think that it starts by clearly, under, like sharing with them that you're at least onto their deception, that like, you know, this court system is some bullshit admiralty thing. They're enacting and protecting statutes that don't apply, that you understand that you are different than the entity that's on the license, even though it bears your name, the fact that it's in all caps, you know that it's a corporation, that you are not it, and that they have as much jurisdiction over you as Walmart has over you, because you are you were created by God, you have God-given rights, and you don't need whatever like privileges they want to offer you. You can just stand by your rights that you reserve, and that you know, you communicate these things. And thus far, I try to stay out of any kind of legal crap, but when I'm in that legal crap, since I've been doing this, I'm now two for two. So I hope to not talk to these bastards, but you know, the next time that I have to go up against them for some terrible thing, I will be certain to go tell them, you guys are committing crimes against humanity. You're enacting a slavery system. I don't want any part of this. I understand that there is a corporate entity with my name, but I am separate from that, and you don't have jurisdiction. So I like the pathway of conditional acceptance, where you're like, I'm happy to do all the things that you're asking me to do, on one little condition: you have to explain to me all this shit. Like, where does your jurisdiction come from? Right. How do you claim to have any rights over me? What do you think your standing is? What is my standing that allows you to like dictate terms to me? Where do you see my consent? Because, you know, any of these documents, like, where did I sign that I agree to this court system anywhere?
I see it's written on your shirt. It says, I consent.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. So, can you guys hear me clearly?
Yep, yes. Yeah. Better.
Okay. All right. Rebooted. I was going to say that one of the main things that I've learned just from listening to Carl Lentz, which is totally antithetical from what, maybe not quite antithetical, but off to a smaller tangent regarding Christopher James, is that in any given, even a traffic court, we can switch back and forth between a common law and admiralty law, and hold both of those courts at the same time, as long as we both know what we're talking about. And I think that when we're doing those things, when I was doing my things in traffic court, they didn't want to answer the questions, and I just had them pigeonholed into this spot where they didn't want to answer the question. And then all of a sudden, if I didn't move from my square and I held my ground, they would just let it go, because they would rather let the $200 ticket go than answer the question and create this precedent.
Because they're still getting probably getting something on the back end just for you appearing.
Right. But the one thing that I've noticed, that there are still little small procedures that are a lot like grammar, but not like grammar. They're more fiduciary, right? You have to pay this certain amount of money in order to get into it. And my last stint with a Supreme Court, New Jersey, was that, just that. Are you willing to pay and that's what they asked me, are you willing to pay the court fees to get out of this? And I said, yeah, I'll pay the court fees. And they didn't want to tell me, like, hey, you were just in, common law, and you had us nailed. You had us just freaking nailed to the grindstone. You took us to the freaking woodshed, but we don't want to tell you did it, because you'll go out and tell everybody you did it and how you did it. You know, if you just pay the $140 in court fees on a $200 ticket, we'll see you later. And in that one instance, I got out of $4,800 in fees for contempt of court and 48 hours in jail, because of the questions I was asking and they didn't want to answer them. It doesn't mean I knew anything. It doesn't mean I was even as close to as educated as I am now. I was just asking the right questions. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that we don't need to state anything other than the fact that we are men or women, and we don't need to state anything else other than this is why I'm here and I disagree with this. And you'd be surprised at how fast they say, all right, you're gone. See you later.
This is that thing I got now.
Hold on. The very first thing that I notice about that is that there's a box around that entire thing. And by the Oxford Styles manual, anything that's in a box as if it's not in that page.
Right.
So that document literally says nothing.
Right. So no, I get that. But what I'm trying to tell you is this is a voter registration notice, and it was sent to me with a voter registration form. Okay. It's got my address, my name. That's why I kind of like just didn't show it really full on, but they filled this thing out for me and put the wrong birth date on it.
Okay.
And it's a voter registration form. It's even got like all the mailing of stuff. So all I got to do is just flip it over and put it in the mail. Like I don't even need postage.
You're probably committing perjury if you sign it.
Well, I'm thinking it's bullshit that they even invaded my privacy like this. Like I didn't opt in to vote, and there's no reason to send me a voter registration application. That really pissed me the hell off. And it comes from some organization called called Civitech, and it's supposed to provide solutions to increase voter registration and improve government services. But their solution to increase voter registration is to send you the freaking application filled out wrong and say, sign it and bring it and send it back in.
Yeah. You know, let me ask you guys this. No document means anything unless you consent to it. It doesn't matter what it says on it.
Right. Well,
unless you consent, it means nothing unless you consent. You could, if I write no contract, I do not like just no contact. Like David Strait says in red ink, sideways on the paper, no contract.
Yep. Well, that disagree. Because there's
something called if your fiction name, you do not consent to it. Just like anything else, if you consent to it, then you're in. If the cop pulls me over and I give him my driver's license registration, I consent to being the fiction, then he has the authority to write me up.
No, I disagree. That before.
Well, I proved that when I got pulled over. Well, I didn't consent. I didn't tell him anything. He couldn't write me the ticket until I gave him my credentials.
Yes. Yeah.
I consented. Okay, so I agreed to the corporate fiction and he wrote me the ticket. But 45 minutes to an hour later, because I wouldn't tell him anything, he couldn't do anything.
Well, no. So in my opinion, we've had this conversations many a time, Stan, where we're talking about like I'm on the side of the road and what's to stop this cop from busting in my window and then shooting me dead.
Nothing.
There is absolutely nothing, right? They will do it because they're adhering to their duties and obligations and don't understand that they do not have in their duties and obligations, there's no way that they can trump our rights, right? But they don't understand that. So when they just shoot you, it doesn't matter. It's just going to hit their insurance. So there's this entire structure that's there that keeps them able to shoot you, and it keeps you basically engineered to be underneath them. And again, it takes
right, but there's nothing you can do.
The only thing you can do is sue them, right? You can only sue them. So if they broke my window, they tear me out and they beat the hell out of me.
But under what jurisdiction?
What's that?
Under what jurisdiction? So we got to remember where we're playing.
No. At that point, it doesn't matter. Because if you can prove the jurisdiction in the civil,
nothing is permanent.
If you prove the jurisdiction in the civil, you win. And if you prove the jurisdiction in the common law, you win out all the way. So under a jury of your peers, or which is actually, you're going to have a justice, you're going to have instead of a judge, all that jazz. You can not only take that guy's entire pension and all of his family's money, his house, his property, everything else as the man,
Depending on who you get, though. This all depends on who you get. Depends on the judge you get.
No,
on the bailiff in there. Not. Depends on everything. Yeah,
judges don't have absolutely. To go. Judges don't have opinion, to go by any particular. No. They look even at the preferences, bailiff. But they even can the still do whatever the fuck they want.
Dude, one of my favorite things I've heard thus far in anything, and I've had it happen to me myself while in court. As I was asking these questions, all of a sudden I have a bailiff come up right next to me, and his whole job is almost at a wink and a nod from the judge, and they're acting within admiralty law, is to come up next to me and intimidate me. And it means like, hey, dude, you're about yay close to getting some cuffs on you, bro. You know, you say the one wrong word at this point in time.
And the fear factor.
It's the fear factor, right? It's the same thing your older brother would pull. It didn't matter if it was your food or not. Homeboy is going to take your food. You know what I mean? Like, he's sitting there going, I'm going to eat your lunch. But this guy is like, oh, I can't do anything about this. Now, all it would take is for a second, you just look at the bailiff and go, as a man, you do understand that I can sue you with or without your insurance, and I can do it under these, you know, things. All of a sudden, things might play out depending on the bailiff's understanding. And that's what's weird about common law. That's, I think, why Aggie talks about it as this octopus, this thing that has, you know, this a bunch of different legs, is because we're all arguing the same point. And that point is that we have more power than we ever thought possible. All it takes is a bit of research. It doesn't matter if it's whether it's Christopher James or anybody else. Doesn't matter if it's freaking David Wynn Miller and you got to learn a whole new language. The only thing that matters is that you can stand there as a man or a woman, which means you are standing in there in your capacity with the utmost of strength, and just standing up to bullies. That's all it is. And it doesn't matter if you write in your fucking contract in crayon. If you stand there and believe it, you're like, the hell with you, because I can fall back at any given time on common law. And if you guys disagree, understand that when I go to this common law side of things and you want to bring a claim to me, that you can also be beheaded for bringing the wrong claim, as long as we're in with a jury of our peers. And I think that's the one thing that is lost. I mean, we don't necessarily need to know a whole language to figure out that if somebody, you know, lies, cheats, or steals, that they should probably get what's coming to them. It doesn't mean they should get death. But so if somebody tells me that I should die for what I did or what I believe in, or I shouldn't, you know, get a freaking vaccination because of what I believe in or anything else, that I can't have some sort of recourse. Every court is due, or where we're due from every court, this level of, best word to say it is recourse. They all have to give us this level of forgiveness that is offered within the Bible that it is created on. So go on.
Well, but my whole point is, like, it's the luck of the draw. You know, if you want to go in there and you go into a court, depending on what it is, it could be a traffic ticket. It could be something simple. It could be something big, and you know your shit. You go in there, and remember, let's reflect back on David Wynn Miller and Russell J. Gould. They didn't commit any crimes. They were just going in there with their grammar, right? But what eventually happened to David Wynn Miller? He did three no's from a judge, and then he got surrounded by U.S. Marshals. And what happened? He capitulated. Russell J. Gould didn't. What happened to him? He got beat up, put in prison several times.
Starved.
Right? Starved. So who's willing to go through all that?
Not many people,
right? So it's like, you know, you got to choose your battles, right? I can tell you that
Russell won't go through it again.
Is this system ever going to change?
Yes.
It will when enough people take a stand. And that's,
this is actually why I build in crypto. Like, you know, I off camera, I was joking. Like, my number one objective is the peaceful destruction of all governments on this planet. You know, and it's not like people shouldn't organize. I want groups of people to have functional organizations. But I just think that what we have now is so absolutely corrupt and violent that there's a Buckminster Fuller quote of, like, you can't protest something away. You have to build something new that makes the previous iteration obsolete. And so, you know, why I spend so much time in crypto is that I look at the system and I say, you know, no matter what all of the actual specific details of this are, I'm aware enough now to know that the whole damn thing is just absolutely corrupt. And I don't want to put any of my energy, effort, money, or anything else into this behemoth that really only seems to export drug abuse, child abuse, and harm. And I don't want any part of any of those things. I am a peaceful, neutral vessel. I would like to make friendly agreements under voluntary conditions with my fellows and have a better world and better life than what's available here. Mm-hmm. And so I build in crypto because this is a voluntary opt-in way that we can create value, that we can exchange in a medium of exchange and figure out how do we get all of these necessities and the niceties of life without all the harm that the current system seems to detail. And if we can figure out a way collectively where we as a people can live well and eat well and provide for our families and do it where we're helping one another, not empowering some like super group of super predators that seem okay with invading other nations, if we can strip those bastards of their ability to print money at whim and instead give it to ourselves in this communal effort of hopefully a more peaceful existence, then that's how I envision all of these things will change. That's actually why I built this game, is that I want a more peaceful world. In order to get there, we have to get people in. And I don't think that we're going to get them in with speculating on tokens or, you know, hour-long discussions on high levels of law that, you know, people that just watch the average Kardashians won't give a shit about. What we need to do is get them to change their behaviors and change their spending patterns. And so to me, the whole thing is a Trojan horse of, you know, come for this fun game where you can earn, but stay for the life-altering crypto experience that means that you understand economic freedom, personal responsibility, and your voice becomes immutable. And with all of that together, that's how we get there.
I think we're on the same page with both of the things we're creating, as a matter of fact. You know, one of the things that I've been trying to work on for a little while does the same thing, right? Build this level of entrepreneurship, build this level of creating this level of you're really taking your life into your own hands. And I don't think that anybody will ever go into a court and say any of the things that any of us have ever said without understanding that they have to at some point in time get out of the current norm and either not just necessarily research, but just become one with yourself, your influence on all your fans and all that jazz. Do whatever you got to do in order to make sure you know that the individual is the most important person in the world, and that's you. And you're the most underrepresented person in the world, which means you're going to have to fight. And if we all do that, and we all do it together with a common understanding, whether it's local or, you know, state or federal or global, we'll all get there together. And I think that that's the energy that I've been feeling for a while now, is a lot of people going towards that. So you're absolutely right. In short.
No, well said, well said. I do have to start wrapping things up, guys, just because I have limited time before I got to finish getting ready for the trip for tonight and heading to New Jersey tomorrow. So
good luck. Tell Ken I said hi.
Appreciate. Any final thoughts on you guys end kind of quickly? I'll let you go, Aggie, and I'll pop you out into the backstage. Eric, I'll let you go and we'll pop you out. Me and Stan will finish up.
Well, Rice, it's a pleasure to be here. Stan, it's a pleasure to get to meet you in person. You know, I believe in what we're doing as a mission and as a group. I think I'm open to there being lots of different ways to tell these people to go pound sand, that there's not one magical document anywhere in the world that will give you unquestioned sovereignty and freedom. It's about some understanding of who you are as a human and as a, you know, created entity, and that you have certain authority that these corporate entities never can touch. And when you stand in that position and you honor it and you are steadfast, and you call them on their shit and their bluffs, that's when I think you can start moving mountains. But to do that, you have to be educated and you have to take time from watching Netflix and cuties and whatever other crap they're trying to jam down your throat, and actually do some research and put in some effort to start figuring out, hey, how come this world doesn't work the way it does? How come everybody's sick around me? Why the hell are we actually stuck in this creepy pandemic that where nobody seems to die from it ever? Or at least none of the people around me or like in any, I'm like three, at least three generations or three, three layers away from anybody that's even died of this stupid thing. So I just, I have a hard time believing it. And there's just a lot of crap that's going on right now, but you got to say, I don't consent. I'm not going to take this shit anymore. I'm going to take a moment to figure out who I am and where I fit in the system. And I'm going to not participate with this stupid beast. And when you start taking those steps, that's how I think we start finding our way to things like the Liberty Movement, to this sort of alternative law, to cryptocurrencies. And that's how we're going to start building a better world. So thank you for the opportunity to go talk about that. I look forward to voluntarily contracting with any and all of you again. And if there's, my corporate ask, come play Splinterlands, because if you want freedom, this is a way that we can kind of rope people in, you know, just be a normie, just play a game and start learning about all this stuff in a very non-techie, non-hardcore way. Just get introduced by a game. And I think that that's enough to start somebody down a path without necessarily going through like the deep, deep depressions of everything is wrong with the world. Just play this game and we'll get you there anyways.
Love it, dude. I love it. And you'll definitely be back, man, for sure. And I encourage people to check out the interviews that me and you did and the video I did with Ken Bozak teaching me how to play Splinterlands.
Good dude.
Yeah. So Dr. Aggie, thank you again. We'll definitely voluntarily contract again.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Much love, brother.
Take care, Dr.
All right, Mr. Eric, quickly.
Well, I'll say this, that if you notice and go back and watch through, I have nodded my head to a lot of the stuff that dude said. I agree with him wholeheartedly. I love to play devil's advocate. And I will say that that's one smart cat. Absolutely one of the smartest cats I've listened to in a while. Guy gets it. In my honest opinion, that's what it's all about, is all of us questioning each other. It's the one thing that I know every one of you guys have done, Stan and Rice. You guys have questioned everybody and anybody that has come up with their solution. And the beauty of it is that we're all on a hunt for a solution, and we're grasping towards some sort of community or leader to get us to a certain point of freedom that we all know we deserve. It's up to you to figure it out. It's up to every single one of us, anybody listening. Understand that your solution is completely different than all of ours, and there's no template we can offer you. I'm very sorry. I wish it was the case where I could give you your template of freedom, but we're all going to have to decide it for ourselves. We're all going to have to make bigger decisions.
I mean, we're going to be finding a lot of different paths that people can have. I mean, there are some paths that have already been made, but it's not that there's only one path to get to that destination.
Right.
So
but their
we're trying to figure out all the different paths that are available.
Right. But once they get to that path and they get to that point where they will need to go down their own path, yes, there is a support network, but you are the only one going down it. And there's a ton of people that will support you going down that path. You know, Stan's path is completely different than mine. Your path is completely different than mine. And the court really, in my opinion, thrives off of that idea where there is no template for us to come in there and fuck them over. But there is no template for them to come over to us and fuck them over, except for the one that they have to put down in paper. And that's our only advantage. It's the one thing I've learned over the course of the last 2 weeks, is that our only advantage in all of this is the fact that they have to write everything down in a court of record or a record of court or whatever the case may be, whatever you want to call it. And we have the luxury. We have the luxury of being able to actually go to them and say, oh, well, whatever one I don't agree with, soup du jour, I can, you know, pick and choose as I go through. I can have a driver's license and registration, or I cannot, because I am a man or a woman. I am a man, and I can go through this life the way I please. And that's where all of our rights are given. And as soon as we all grasp that one concept and then just start moving from that point with confidence, I think we'll all get there much faster. So,
well said, my friend. Well, I look forward to our next video together in Extreme. And I'm going to kick you out. Me and Stan are going to wrap this thing up, man.
Enjoy, fellas. We'll talk soon.
All right, Eric.
What's going on, man? I guess we're going to wrap this thing up. Any final thoughts on your end?
You know, Rice, just everything that we've done so far, I'm coming back to square zero, and we've gotten nowhere. And I don't see anything that anyone's doing really doing anything. You know what I mean? It's not really, nothing's really happening. There's things out there. There's people doing things, but it's nothing's really happening. But I do see every individual that we've spoken to has that piece of the puzzle that we could all utilize all that information to try to come up with a somewhat of a solution. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
I really don't.
There are solutions out there. I mean, this isn't a hopeless thing. This is not hopeless. That's why the last live stream we did was we called it a message of hope. And this is rise and stand. If you can't get the rice and stand thing, but this is, there's a point to this. I mean, ultimately there is something that we can do, but the most important thing is starting to unite and come together. And that's part of like what we're all trying to do. All these different people are building their communities, and we need to pull these communities together and build that strength in numbers so that we can actually take the action when we figure out together what that action is. But well, I don't think it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, and it's the most important thing that I think people can participate in today.
And let's look at all the protests that go on around the world, right? I mean, they're out there, millions in the streets, but is there a result?
So like far,
all
no.
These countries protesting for this, but what happens? They're still enforcing the mask. They're still enforcing how do we really?
At the same time, though, I know you're not telling people not to.
I'm not telling people what to do. If you don't want to wear one, don't wear one. If you want to wear one, wear one.
But as far as like whether or not gathering is not making an effect or not, it's still important to gather regardless of if it's not doing anything right now, because you don't know what the combination of things are that will make those impacts.
How do we address directly to the people rather than we can speak our voice, but are we having an impact? Like, how do we have an impact? I don't know the solution. I really don't. I wish I did.
That's why we're on this mission, man.
I wish I could just tell everybody this was the solution. I don't have a solution, but collectively, if we can get all these ideas and everything together somehow, eventually it'll mold into something possibly. But I do perceive that we do need some inside help here, because this is bigger. I mean, I think on the whole scale here that there's so much going on that we have to pay attention to, right?
Yeah.
And how do we do this in a peaceful manner? A redress of grievances.
I agree.
How do we submit them? Where do we go to? Then we assemble. We say, hey, this is what we see wrong. This is the information we see on these people that have come out. Maybe we don't leave it up to the Supreme Court. So we say, hey, we the people assume that this is going on based on this information. We want to see some action, because what if this election goes the other way? They're just going to shove it under the rug and it never existed. Do we keep perpetuating it and say, no, we the people, we stand up, we go to the courts, we say, we want to see action on these crimes. We want to see action on this. We want to see action on this. Or we just sit down and watch the TV and wait for it to unfold, or wait for Q, or wait for Trump. Like, what are we waiting for? That's where I'm confused. Yeah. This is just where I'm confused. And I know that's why we're here.
Yeah.
This is just to get this into the masses and the consciousness of the people. It's like, what do we need to do to get it done?
Well, it's funny because that was one of the things you said at the very beginning of the video. And I said, get her done. So we will figure out what needs to be done. Ladies and gentlemen, I really appreciate everybody for tuning in. I apologize for kind of abruptly. I know we were going to go an hour. We're over an hour. But if I didn't have the trip coming up. I would have kept the conversation going, and I definitely want to continue. We continue these, but I want to continue it with Eric and Aggie, particularly because I thought it was a very thought-provoking conversation. I thought Aggie brought a lot of value to the conversation, especially considering everything that we've been learning from other people. So I just want to encourage people, again, depending on where you're watching this, make sure that you are subscribed to both channels. We got links down below for both of our channels. We got playlists for all the videos that we do together, so we would encourage you to check that out. Be sure to like, comment, and share. And as always, I personally encourage you to be the change by practicing change. And Stan, anything you want to say before we end
this? Much love, everyone. Be loved. Much love. Good night.